Is this thing on? I mean, how long has it been since we've done a podcast?
I know.
A long time.
It has. All right. We gotta get
regular again.
Yeah. That means something totally different when you hit your 40s. Anyway. All right. So let's go ahead. Let's see if I remember how to do the intro. Hey, welcome back to the Killer Frogs. It's been a little bit more than a few weeks since we've had a podcast. I would like to welcome everybody back, and we are gearing up for another great season of Horned Frog football. With us this week, we've got Ryan Zeller. How you doing, Ryan?
I'm doing well. Good to see everybody again.
Yes. And on the phone, we've got Wes Phelan, the original Killer Frog. Hey, Wes.
Hey, glad to be here.
Good to have you. And also, from the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, we've got Drew Davison. Hey, Drew.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Thanks for coming on. Well, so the last couple of days has been the Big 12 Media Days over at Jerry's World, and it has been a bit of a circus. But for the most part, we've come away a little bit wiser. We got to meet some of the new head coaches in the Big 12. Of course, came away with plenty of Gary-isms, which we'll get to shortly. The players made a good showing. And, of course, let's just dive right into this, and let's just start off with the new coaches. And, Drew, we got four new coaches coming into the league this year. We've got Les Miles, Matt Wells, Neil Brown, and Chris Klieman. Of those four, two quick questions. What did you think of the new coaches? And then the second thing is, who do you think has the hardest job going into this season?
Well, I thought all four coaches handled themselves well, spoke well. Of course, you know, as we were kind of joking through the show, no one's lost a game yet. So everyone's in a good mood. Everyone's positive. But as far as the hardest job, you know, I kind of got a 1A, 1B. I think Chris Klieman at Kansas State, following in Bill Snyder's shadow, is always tough. And you know, he's a guy who obviously was great at North Dakota State, won national championships. And, you know, maybe he's the Bo Ryan of football. You know, Bo Ryan had all that success and then was able to take it to Wisconsin. But that's easier said than done. And obviously Kansas isn't a breeding ground for football talent. Mm-hmm. Matt Wells is inheriting at Texas Tech, where it might be a little easier to get guys. And then I would say kind of right below him, I think Neil Brown's a great coach, but West Virginia is another tough battle. I think as the years go on, people will probably start to really appreciate what Dana Holgorsen did in getting them to 6 of 7 bowl games and whatnot. So I think those two are probably the toughest hills to climb, but I think the Snyder factor, and just it's kind of like whoever's going to replace Gary Patterson whenever he retires, those are big shoes to fill. It's tough to come in after a legend.
That's very true.
Oh, God help him. God help him, too. That's going to be a tough one.
Well, I think Neil Brown had the line of the day today where he was like, you know, the reason why somebody had asked him, you know, why are the West Virginia fans so accepting of you? And he went through the whole, you know, stipulations, you know, 5 hours from his hometown, and that they're just fantastic fans. But I think the main point he made, which, like I said, was the line of the day, was, you know what, we're undefeated at this point. So, you know, any fan base is going to be happy at this point.
That's true.
Right.
And I agree with you as far as Chris Klieman. I mean, going into that particular situation when you're replacing a legend is got to be tough. But
the old rule, you never follow a legend, certainly.
Absolutely.
Didn't his team beat K-State a few years ago, or that South Dakota State?
I think they did beat K-State a few years ago, didn't they?
I believe they did.
Yeah.
It was a shocker.
It was, but
I think he's a good problem. What I see the problem is, right? He doesn't have any name recognition down here, and he's got an established recruiting base, and that's got to be hard. Same with Les Miles, who got automatic name recognition, and I believe he's got a national championship. Did he not win one at LSU? Yes,
he had the ring on.
Yeah.
Very prominent as he kind of held his right hand closest to the camera the entire time. With that ring in frame the entire time. It was, yeah. I don't think that was a subconscious decision.
Yeah, but you know, he's got name recognition. It's talking about now we got any players.
Right. He's well, and Drew, and I noticed you kind of left less off your 1A, 1B kind of list. And how do you think, and to your point, as you said, Kansas isn't exactly known for their recruiting. How do you feel about Les Miles taking over that job has been the perennial doormat of the Big 12 since we've been in it?
Yeah, I mean, well, to be honest, I kind of left him off those two because the expectations at Kansas are obviously lower than K-State or West Virginia. Fair enough. The teams that have won, you know, big and I actually are in contention, so it's a little easier to get to a 6-7 program as opposed to 10. But yeah, I think he's got his work cut out. I think, you know, he's he inherited a little bit of talent. Obviously, KU beat TCU last year. Granted, there's a lot of turmoil that game or whatever you want to call it. But yeah, I mean, I think he's got his work cut out. But I do think, you know, he'll be able to have some success there. But again, the bar just isn't that high compared to some other programs.
Yeah, that's true. But, you know, he does have his name going for him. I'm so foot in the right door, through a step in the right direction.
Right.
I kind of look at, was it Matt Wells at Texas Tech? Is that correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. Which... yeah, he did great at Utah State.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he did great there. And he's, I don't know, Herbert and Redbine is a good coach. But again, down here, you got to reestablish your recruiting base. And I don't know if you're going to go the JUCO route. I don't suspect Wyman will probably do that.
Well, I think that today we were talking, or it was yesterday, when we got to hear from Matt Wells, and there were a lot of questions about how they kind of went to the transfer route pretty quick. And of course, given the fact of how late that staff kind of got put together relative to the signing day and everything else, they kind of had to go that route. But I don't know, Ryan, Drew, did you guys get a feel that their whole theme this year is like, look at what other teams have been able to do in Lubbock, so it can be done in Lubbock. That seems to be like the tagline, is then like, it can be done in Lubbock, which I you know, take it for what it is, but that seems to be what he's trying to tell his players.
Yeah. And I, you know, the one thing, it's probably the main thing that stands out to me over the last 2 days, and it's sad because, but it just, everybody will understand as soon as they hear me say this, was when he was talking about how great the fan base is, how great the people are, on and on and on, and how he wants to continue to create the toughest environment to play football in. And all I could think about was, crap, we're going there this year. And then you start thinking about, please let it be an 11 o'clock a.m. game, because then most of the students are still asleep, right? And they come drooling.
No. Hungover.
And that too. They come in a little late, right? But if it's a night game, it's going to be a miserable experience as usual. And I will say, we were over there when they had the panel at the in the afternoon. Gary was talking, and you can go to Killer Frog's Facebook and actually listen to this, because we caught him right in the perfect moment. One of the reporters asked him, you know, whether he likes playing there during the – what the difference is of playing there during the day versus an evening game. And he was like, well, the difference is – at an 11 o'clock game, you get tortillas thrown at your head. And at an evening game, you get water bottles thrown at your head. Talk to my coaches and players and you'll find out how they feel about that. So then on top of that, I'll let y'all talk. But what kills me is that when they were talking today about the penalties and, you know, the horns down, foul and all of that crap, I was like, does anybody want to mention the water bottles, like the abuse, brutality that happens on that field to our players, leaders, and the fans? Like, we take a beating at those games, but nobody ever brings it up.
Well, Ryan, congratulations for staying up during the officiating.
I know, right?
Media day. I think you might have been one of four people. No, I'm joking. But actually, an interesting note I found interesting, at least, was Gary Patterson was an assistant when Matt Wells was the quarterback at Utah State. So it kind of shows you it's really a small world in the coaching world. So Gary, you know, knows Matt Wells, thinks highly of him. So I think that'll be an interesting program to follow. But yeah, he is stepping into a kind of like Sean said, you know, all these expectations. Oh, Chris Beard did this with the basketball team and the baseball teams and the College World Series. Those are pretty high expectations to walk right into.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. If he can bring some Duke fans to Lubbock, then he'll be ahead of the game. But that Kingsbury was never known for defense, and neither was Mike Leach.
No.
But, so that'd be a big step in the right direction for him. But you got to have a scheme. You got to have the players to run it. So yeah, I'm not sure what they got on in the cupboard there, but I guess we'll find out.
Yeah.
Yeah, that seemed to be a big well, what was it? Bowlesby, right in the beginning, right? Right when we kicked off Media Day, he like pointedly told every single reporter, write this down. And he made a big point about how the Big 12 does play defense, which of course every TCU fan says, yeah. We know this. I mean, this is nothing new. But to the point, I mean, I think a couple of coaches today, and I forgot who specifically made this point, but he was saying, you know, one of the big reasons why the Big 12 has had this stigma of not being able to play defense is simply because the quarterback play for the last few years has been so ridiculously high in the league. Some of the best quarterbacks. I mean, look at what Patrick Mahomes has been doing, for goodness sakes, at Kansas City. I mean, if you take a look at what the Big 12 has produced from a quarterback standpoint, I mean, two Heisman winners, for goodness sakes, and NFL stars. I mean, no wonder why nobody can play really good, honest, to goodness, defense in this league when you have wide receivers and quarterbacks that are able to catch pretty much anything that's thrown across the field. So,
Mike, do you think that Heisman trend will continue at OU with Jalen Hurts in there?
Yeah, I think, when I was talking to Matt Leiner about this, they have a little Fox Sports thing. I missed Ryan and Sean there, but he was telling us that, you know, he thinks Hurts can, but my thing is the thing that's going to knock Hurts, and whether it's fair or not, is at some point, do you just say, oh, this is a system quarterback, you know, right?
Yeah.
Like, is this just Lincoln Riley's system? That's not trying to take anything away from Baker Mayfield or Kyler Murray, because I think they're fairly special players. But, you know, okay, at some point, I think that's going to weigh in some Heisman voters' minds.
But you know what? Yeah. I mean, both those guys are successful now in the NFL, aren't they? In Kyler?
Well, he is the top overall pick, so.
Oh, yeah. He'll be his first year. And then, but Baker, mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I see what you're saying. Hopefully they'll both end up being successful, and hopefully that won't. And the way I see it is it's like, well, at least OU is a blue blood, so at least they had that going for them. And if Alabama can win everything every single year, all the votes to be number one and so on and so forth, then why can't OU with the quarterbacks, you know?
Well, that's good.
You know, but
yeah, that's true.
It'll be interesting for sure.
How did Tom Herman come across?
Smart.
Smart.
Just kidding. Mensa. Totally kidding.
Mensa level press conference.
Oh, God. I'll never forget running up to one of his former players about a year ago at a golf shop in Austin. And this kid was a backup tight end. I said, what do you think of Herman? He said, well, I like him as a coach. And I said, but as a man? He goes, yeah, I'm not going to go there. Oh, okay.
That's a 5-star review right there.
Yeah, that told me everything I needed to know.
Yeah. Well, speaking of tight ends, that seemed to be a position that a lot of coaches kept talking about the last 2 days was, need to get bigger tight ends, how we're going to use the tight ends, how we're going to insert the tight ends more and more. Drew, do you think that this is a shift away from that real quick, fast-paced spread offense in the Big 12 to more of a pro-style offense?
Yeah, I think so. And I actually kind of default to Gary just because he's been around so long. And he was talking, everything's kind of cyclical, you know, like, oh, let's get big up front and whatnot. So, yes and no. I do think, and you know, he kind of made the point, you know, if you're going to have, let's say, a Travis Kelce or, like, you know, first round talent at tight end, of course, you're going to have to pay more attention. But if they're not that special, then it's really not going to change much. So, you know, his whole point was it just depends. You know, it comes down to the Jimmies and Joes, as the old saying goes. So, I do think we're going to see more, time of possessions becoming bigger now. So, you know, just kind of a more methodical offenses. But at the same time, you know, if you got guys on the outside like a Jalen Reagor or some of the Colin Johnson at Texas or whatnot, I mean, you're going to take advantage of those guys. But I do think, you know, we'll probably see more tight end play. And I think that's, like you said, coming from the NFL to college, whereas most things go college to NFL.
Well, we've always had good tight ends. We just don't use them. So hopefully we're permitting the system a little bit more.
Yeah, that would be a nice thing to see on the field a little bit. Whenever we did get the tight end involved, it's one or two plays a season. And it seems to work for those one or two plays, but that's usually about all we see. It is always surprising when Patterson pulls out the tight end, but who knows. It would be nice to see. It would be nice to have a little bit slower pace offense and something that the defense can kind of get a little bit of a breather in and
sure,
can do
sure,
his
sure.
substitutions without waiting till the very last second. But who knows? We'll see how that goes. But speaking of things going from the NFL back into college, as Drew just mentioned, as Ryan pointed out, because she was one of the four people who did stay awake during the officiating portion of the media days, they were talking a little bit about how some of the rules were kind of changing for player safety, and they've looked at kind of some of the things the NFL has done, and they've implemented some things in the NCAA. But, Drew, two specific issues. One, Ryan mentioned with the horns down, which we'll get into in just a minute. But one that everybody kind of – it was taken aback a bit today was the new rule concerning outlawing or making illegal a two-player wedge on kickoff. Can you – for maybe some of the fans who don't exactly know what a wedge is on a kickoff or understand this rule, can you explain a little bit about this and how do you feel about this change?
Yeah, so the wedge block, it used to be, you know, back in the day when we were growing up, you could have up to four-man wedges. And for the listeners out there, you know, sometimes on kickoffs you see guys hold hands. That's kind of the wedge where they kind of team up to block one of the kickoff coverage unit guys. So it's kind of – the new rule says if you're within 2 yards and kind of teaming up to take out one guy – that's not legal. And, you know, my whole thing, I think we're closer and closer to just getting rid of the kickoff. And, you know, I think last year, and I have to double check my stats, but I'm pretty sure one or two teams average more than 25 yards on kickoff returns. So getting the ball at the 25 yard line, I really think takes away a lot of the incentive to, you know, bring it out of the end zone and that play.
Right.
You just don't see it that much. And I think Bob Bowlesby was saying out of one of the semifinals game here in the last year or two, there's 13 kickoffs, 11 were returned. Out of 13 kickoffs, only two got past the 25 yard line or something like that. So, you know, I know fans, it's kind of nostalgia to see the quote unquote kickoff, but at the end of the day, I think that play is going to go away, but you know, I think they're doing what they can to make it safer. The wedge block, I'm fine with them going away with. The blindside block, some of the examples they showed looked like clean blocks where they just guys to more push and not have the big blow-up hit, which I get for player safety, but at the same time, you know, football's football too. So right. I'm not the biggest fan of the blindside rule, but – because it's not a true blindside block when you get them. Some of the examples they showed were most fans would say, oh, that's a clean hit.
Right. And just to clarify, what he was saying was is that in order for it to be considered or not to be considered a blindside block, you almost had to go after him like head to like face on. Right. He was like the 10-2 was his was his analogy was. So for those of you who are at home, just imagine, you know, put your hands 10 to 2. And as long as you are face to face with that individual, it's not going to be a blindside block. But there's a lot of, everybody knows, right? I mean, you could commit to tackling a guy and he can shift at any one given moment. And then now he's no longer face to face with you. And now you could possibly be called a blindside block. Same thing goes with the wedge. There seems to be the way that the rules are being interpreted for this season leaves a lot of things open to where officials may actually end up deciding games this season by calling these sort of things. I mean, on the wedge, at first it seemed like the rule was being interpreted by the head of officials as two guys coming together within 6 yards and advancing down the field at the same time. And then he kind of contradicted himself later when he was clarifying after a question where he said, well, no, it'll be called when two players come together within 6 feet of each other, regardless if they're moving at the field at the same time or whether or not they've actually made contact with somebody. So then the question becomes, if you're on kickoff coverage, if you're on kickoff return, you've now got to think, I can't get within 6 feet of another one of my other players or otherwise I'm going to get a call or a possibility of getting a call. And how to... That kind of changes the dynamic of the game a little bit, doesn't it, Drew?
Oh, absolutely. And you know, that's the other thing. And I know he was asked, and to be honest, I wasn't exactly clear on the answer where the spot foul start return. Let's say two guys are within 2 yards. I would say the 15, 16-yard line, because that's usually where – you kind of start forming your kickoff return blocks and kind of scheming it up there. Well, if you get flagged right there before any contact, let's say, that's a huge penalty because now you're going to start inside your own 10-yard line. So, like you said, Sean, I mean, it could have drastic effects. And that's why, you know, I'm sure the coaches and I know the officials meet with these colleges, so they'll hammer out the specifics of that. But, you know, if it's where the first contact's made, then maybe it's more like the 20, 25 and it's not as devastating. But if it's where they initially quote unquote formed the wedge,
yeah, you're a lot right. of balls placed inside the 10.
Games. I mean,
right.
I have a question, especially regarding like the blindside tackles, because that's going to be happening fast with the kickoffs. You can, it's kind of all slow motion, you can see what's going on, but are these going to be reviewable by the officials and the coach, or what's the deal on that, and how much
you is took, it gonna... you took my question, Ryan.
Oh, you must be really smart.
you are I see a lot of just judgment calls coming. There's gonna be a lot of arguments coming, I think, this fall. But you know, the rules are what they are, and you guess you have to learn to abide by them or work around them. But did I read it right? They could actually throw a flag if you do horns down.
Correct. No. They most definitely will flag you if you do horns down. That's
ridiculous.
Well,
not if you do frogs down. That one is okay. You will not get a flag.
Or guns down. Guns down's okay. Claw. What is Baylor's? Did they actually just call that the claw? Is that what that is?
Yeah.
Didn't Jim Carrey copyright that in Liar Liar? Anyway, I digress. So, whatever. I mean, if you do any other sign down, then you know, hey, whatever. But right, but the horns down thing, you can't do.
This is the theater of the absurd here. Come on, guys.
It's football, right? Yeah.
It's football.
Well, Drew talked about this.
Whatever.
Drew, talk about this for a minute. What do you think? I mean, as a journalist, I know we want to have good sportsmanship in sports, but there are times, you know, when you are, whether it's throwing frozen water bottles at the opposing fans or flashing the horns down. I mean, there are some things in college football that you kind of have to let go, right?
Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, the horns down, I think it is kind of a judgment call, but at the end of the day, I mean, I'm just kind of at a loss. Why doesn't the Big 12 just make a decision? It's either okay or it's not. I mean, to kind of be like, oh, it's okay under these circumstances if you go to your bench or whatnot, you know. And I was actually talking to Stefan, the former TC writer, at the Star Telegram, and it's like it seems like the horns down is going to be okay if you did it in Fort Worth or Stillwater or wherever. But if you do it in Austin, because it could be quote-unquote taunting fans or whatnot, riling others up, it looks like it's going to be called more as opposed to if a TCU guy did a Amon G. Carter. It probably slides by a little bit. It sounds like they're going to be a little more lenient. But again, typical, and officials always like to give themselves leeway. But, no definitive concrete statement on the horns down.
I mean, let's just think about this real quick, y'all. I mean, just think about it. How ridiculous is it that they actually sat around a conference table and came up with this rule? I mean, we're talking about a hand gesture. It's not the finger, it's the horns down. Like that's fun. That's the good part of rivalries. That's what makes sports and college sports better than professional sports. And to take that away is absurd to me. I mean, I even think it's fun to see the guys dance in the end zone. They can't decide in the NFL whether that's allowed or not. They switch back and forth. But I get certain stuff like, all the words that they exchange on the field that can get someone going, cussing and all of that. But an actual hand gesture that's not F you, I think is fine, even though it kind of is insinuating that. But still, I still think it's fine. It's ridiculous.
Once again, bitterly absurd. It's kind of crazy. And I think part of that is much easier to take and get hit in the head with a frozen water bottle at out in Lubbock.
Yeah. Well, they're the worst things you can get in Lubbock. But one thing about this, though, it does seem like they are kind of treating – and I think this is where the fans really kind of get riled up. It appears that they're treating one school – differently than the other nine.
Mm-hmm.
I think we all agree they are still kind of the 800-pound gorilla in the room, but it seems absurd that they would go out of their way to make a rule specifically designed around one hand sign that taunts or makes fun of one of the 10 member schools.
Like crybabies. Who brought that up? Like, I want to know the guy that actually called Bowlesby or whoever they call and said, "Hey, I have a problem I need to talk to you about. It really hurts us when our players see other players doing horns down." Like, they should even notice that stuff. Their head should just so be in the game that who cares? Like,
who was the announcer who got called out on air because he did the horns down? You guys remember that? ESPN.
I don't remember who did that.
I forgot who it was.
I'll look it up.
But yeah, I mean, when it's reached even that level, I think we all agree it's kind of gotten absurd. But anyway, those are the new rules for the Big 12 this year. We'll certainly see a lot of controversy. I'm sure there'll probably be, by week three, a call for some official's head because they've called an illegal wedge that costs the team a possible win or something like that. We'll see how it goes. But I just hope that Patterson is in his locker room telling his team, look at tape of LT. Whenever LT scored, gave the ball to the official, ran back to the bench. Do that every time. You're not going to get flagged. But, Drew, you want to have the last word on that?
Oh, yeah. Well, I was just going to say, one thing I do think the officials got right is they did not follow the NFL's lead on reviewing pass interference and penalties, because that would have opened another huge can of worms. And, we can rip them for the horns down and all kind of the borderline nonsense or whatever you want to call it. But at least they're not going down that route, because I don't, like the guy, Greg Burke said, not working well in the Canadian Football League. I just see it creating more headaches and more controversy at the NFL level. It seems like they kind of went way extreme because of one bad call in the NFC Championship game.
Wes, you constantly comment on this. There are just way too many game stoppages, especially when it comes to reviews.
The games are getting so long.
They are.
Oh, it's ridiculous. I mean, the reviews, I really think they ought to put a timer on them. If you can't figure it out in a minute or 45 seconds, then Clay calls us, stands us cold.
Right. Well, and there was just one change in review that we didn't talk about that I think is a good thing, and that is now automatically every targeting rule will be reviewed. Where apparently before, I thought that change had already been made, but apparently from what Burke said was that it's up to the discretion, I guess, of the officiating crew, and the vast majority of them have kind of gone to replay, but it wasn't an automatic review until this.
And also, right, it's not going to be as easy to call it targeting because now if one element is not present, then they cannot eject the player, right?
Yeah, what do they say? There had to be an attack. Is that what that was the phrase? Attack, yeah. Right?
Right. Yeah, so they love those keywords.
Yes.
You can refer back to the Killer Frogs spray thread. Paint. We have the whole slideshow posted.
Yeah. Yeah. But I will say the blindside blocks, the two examples they showed at least, he said those are borderline targeting. So it sounds like, and I know Ryan kind of asked about it earlier, but it sounds like those blindside block penalties or whatnot will be reviewed just because they're quote unquote targeting or possible targeting fouls too now.
Yeah. Amen.
Yeah. Well, and they specifically talked about how, you know, the guys going in to tackle the other guy and the one that's getting tackled decides to lower his head. And then it always gets called on the other guy until they review it. Sometimes they'll get it right. Sure. Specifically talked about that too, so I guess there were enough complaints about that last year that they're actually addressing it.
Yeah, I think they've almost got the targeting call down to where I think the fans are at least somewhat happy with when that gets called and how they handle it. And I think the review part of it, because of the adverse penalty that kind of goes with it, I think that makes sense. But to Drew's point, not replaying every possible penalty, especially pass interference, even though I know 2014 TCU fans, we wish there could be review on pass interference, Baylor. But for the most part, I think I agree. From a Canadian standpoint, it's not working out there. I've watched a couple Canadian games, and it's so boring. Not because it's just in Canada, that could be part of it, but mainly because of the fact that they have so many stoppages in the game because they want to review every little nitpicky thing.
Yeah.
And it gets boring. At some point in time, you got to trust the refs. You got to realize they're human. They're going to make mistakes, but you got to trust them to make the call because that's what they're there for.
Mm-hmm. So can we talk about the individual interviews with the players?
Yes. If Drew, you got a little bit more time to stick with us?
Yeah, I'm good.
All right. Well, Ryan, go ahead and take it away. Good segue.
So I just talked to the TCU players, and I was actually emailing with Jeremiah this evening. He's confirmed that he's coming to the State of the Frogdom. So yay, everybody come sign up for the State of the Frogdom. Our ADJD is going to be there. But I was just telling him how proud I was of our players because, you know, I mean, they're well-trained. I mean, Mark Cohen always has them prepared. The coaches have them prepared, but they can get a little boring sometimes because they just seem to kind of have all the same talking points, you know? But this year seemed different. It didn't seem different. It was different. These guys were so relaxed, just hanging out, having a conversation, laughing, talking. It wasn't canned. They just talked, and it was very, very good. I thoroughly enjoyed them. Real quickly, it was Ross Blacklock. Do what?
Ross Blacklock.
It was Ross Blacklock, Ennis Gaines, Lucas Niang. Is that how you say his last name? Okay. Yeah. Jalen Reger. My guy, he's going to be such a stud again. And then Garrett Wallow. I mean, that guy was amazing last year too. So, and Ross will be back on the field this year after having to sit out last year because of an injury. And if you remember him, he was always the one that would jump up on the bench on usually on the 50-yard line, just waving his towel, getting everybody up in the stands. He has so much spirit. And he said he learned a lot from, you know, being on the sideline during the season. He just, you know, he got to see the game from a different perspective, got to hear what's going on, you know, on the sideline and how important the chemistry and energy is on the sideline. And he said all these players in their own way, you could tell. And I left there super excited about this season. They're almost beside themselves with this team this year. And I don't know if we're going to win the conference championship or what kind of season we'll have. But what I do know after talking with those guys is that these guys love each other. I mean, they are in it. They're all rooting for each other. They're all working to get better. Their energy, their confidence, everything, their love for their coaches, it was just all there. It was very real and sincere. And I'm just excited to see what they can do this year. And they're all older too, which is nice. So Drew, you go ahead. Tell everybody what you know,
TCU, they got 7 or 8 guys who can be NFL caliber talents, or 7 or 8 guys who might get drafted next year. I mean, clearly the big question is quarterback, but as far as the guys who are there, all of them handle themselves well. And it was good to hear from, you know, you all know the injury situation last year, but you know, Ennis Gaines and Ross Blacklock kind of using that as motivation throughout the offseason and in rehab. You can tell they're chomping at the bit to get fall camp started here in a couple weeks. And, you know, I agree. I think Jalen Reagor is going to have a special year. And I think, you know, I've written about it a little bit, but I think on a big national scale, people forget he had 4 different quarterbacks last year, and he still put up 1,000 yards, which is pretty impressive. Wow. You know, just in and of itself, and you know, talking to some people I've seen practice, and talking to Jalen himself, you know, the chemistry looks like it's going to be there. Whether it's Alex Dillon, whether it's Max Duggan, whether it's one of the other guys, you know, he seems fired up about the quarterback play. And maybe, you know, just having one or at most 2 guys as opposed to 4 trying to get them the ball.
Yeah.
Now, speaking of quarterback, I got to ask the question. It seems like Patterson counting Alex Dillon right now. Is Matthew Baldwin out of the picture completely?
Yes.
Is he injured or?
Yeah. We don't expect Baldwin to see the field this year, I imagine. At all, even if it's one of those 4 redshirt style games that you can get now, I don't see we're going to see it. What do you think, Drew? You think we're going to see him at all?
Yeah, well, yeah, Wes. He did have surgery. Gary kind of confirmed that at media day, so he's not going to be. He might be ready at some point in fall camp, but he for sure won't be ready at the start of fall camp, and he still needs to get the eligibility waiver, which is kind of an uphill battle at this point. So, you know, it does seem unlikely. And you know, he redshirted last year technically at Ohio State, so he can't really do the 4 games and done.
That's right.
You know, so he'll either be eligible or not. But, you know, right now, yeah, I think it's Alex Dillon or Max Duggan are probably, you know, the 2 leading candidates to start.
Yeah.
Justin Rogers, you think we'll see more action?
Justin Rogers is 90%, and Gary said, you know, again, they're not going to push it with his injury. I think it's really his lateral movement trying to get out of the pocket, evade pressure, because he's got, you know, clearly a special arm. But, you know, he's in the mix, and Mike Collins is going to be in the mix too. But it just sounds like Dalton or Duggan – kind of have the edge as of now, but you know, fall camp hasn't started, so we'll see.
Well, we can put in place to protect Justin Rogers a little bit, not roll him out, but you know, just straight hand on stuff, a quick drop back and a flare pass or something that minimizes the chance of him getting hit or taking a shot on his leg. But I understand the drop foot's a nerve pre issue.
Yeah.
And those are hard to overcome. So, you know, anyway, we'll see.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Jalen Smith at the Cowboys, it took him about 3 years to really get back to where he was. And Justin's at 2 years. So, and I do think, you know, Sonny Cumbie and Gary kind of like the mobile quarterback too. They like, you know, that's kind of why they liked Sean so much last year, you know, kind of being able to run, get out of the pocket. And Alex and Max kind of give him that option, whereas Justin might not be there quite yet.
Well, also the last couple of years, our offensive line wasn't much to speak of. So you kind of need a quarterback that could scramble because you weren't going to be able to hold off that pass rush for very long.
I think they've come together.
I think the offensive line has come together. I think that's the one area that I think that was kind of underrated going into these last couple of media days. Nobody really wanted to talk about. But more to the point, going back to the quarterbacks, I think the interesting aspect that what Patterson mentioned yesterday during his press conference was how Delton kind of saved the spring in his transfer in as, you know, the older guy who knows how to prepare for a Big 12 game, who stepped in immediately, had that kind of leadership capability, and really kind of raised the bar of the competition within the quarterbacks. And I think the real nice thing that he said, more to what Ryan was saying with the other players that were there at Media Day, was that this core team of six quarterbacks, no offense, Drew, but your colleague at the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, his tweet notwithstanding, I think having these six guys is absolutely fantastic because the level of competition, as Patterson said, it couldn't be higher at this point. But they all like each other. They all want to be the guy, but they're not tearing each other down to be that guy. You're all basically lifting each other up, but they all want to be the guy. And that's the kind of competition you want at quarterback, right, Drew?
Absolutely.
And Gary said, you know, that throughout his career, the more competition, the better, and the best guy is going to emerge. And, you know, yeah, like you said, I mean, Alex Delton really did kind of save TCU. I know we're talking about six quarterbacks now, but back in December when Sean announced he was going to transfer, TCU was down to Justin Rogers, who, you know, he's obviously still not 100%, and Max Duggan looking at getting the most of the reps during the spring. So, and then all of a sudden, you know, you get Baldwin transferring here, and you get Matthew Downing transferring from Georgia here. So, the quarterback room looked a lot different near the end of the season to what it is today. But yeah, I mean, I think, and just talking to a guy like Lucas Niang, who, you know, played high school ball with Mike Collins. I mean, he's obviously high on Collins, but he's like, whoever wins the job's going to earn it, deserve it. And, sure, you know, obviously if you beat out five other guys, there's no question, you know, you've earned the gig.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And did it
absolutely
did it sound like Patterson isn't looking like, unlike a couple other coaches where they kind of left the door open to kind of quarterback by committee almost. It looks like Patterson's looking for one guy and one guy only to lead this team.
Yeah, I agree. And it'll be very interesting if let's say Delton starts the season because, you know, going to Purdue, I know it's not Michigan State or Michigan or Ohio State, but it's still a Big 12 road game. You probably want a guy with some experience. Whereas, you know, who knows if Max, a true freshman, would be ready for that type of stage. But, you know, I do think they like one guy. But at the same time, he talked last year a lot about trying to get Mike Collins some playing time. So it will be interesting to see if they try and work in a couple quarterbacks early on, you know, assuming the games are, you know, justified. So. But yeah, I think in Sonny Cumbie and you know, I know defense is a lot different, but most offensive guys have their guy and stick with their guy when it comes to quarterback.
How was Delton's passing? I remember him a little bit from watching K-State last year. I know he's a good runner, but is he a good enough passer?
Yeah, I've heard he's throwing the ball well, and I think it's important for, you know, TCU fans to remember, you know, that there's, you know, so many transfer quarterbacks last year, bigger names than Alex Delton. But at K-State, Delton never had the weapons he's going to have at TCU. Yeah. He never had a Jalen Reagor. He never had – so it's the old cliche, but new system, fresh start, whatever you want to call it. You know, they think, you know, Alex Delton's full abilities or talent – we're not really shown at K-State, and he'll obviously be surrounded with better playmakers at least on the outside here at TCU.
Good.
Yeah, at the very least, I mean, having Delton here at least gives you an option with Duggan. You don't necessarily need to just throw him to the wolves from day one. Mm-hmm. I mean, if the coaches feel like he needs a little bit more time, obviously, to develop, having Delton here does give you a little bit of breathing room. Of course, with Mike Collins, if he's back to 100%, and with Justin Rogers looking really, really good too, if he has a good fall, who knows what might happen? Like you said, Drew, what may happen in that quarterback room? We may be surprised. Who knows? It may be Rodgers that comes out on top. But you know, anything can happen at this point. And it's exciting because, like you said, before the spring, that room looked like, you know, like tumbleweed rolling across. It's like, what in the world's going to happen next year? But now it's an embarrassment of riches. And as long as we can keep these guys healthy, I think that's going to be a huge positive moving forward, not just obviously for that position, but for the offense and the team as a whole.
Yeah. Can Patterson give any insight as to the defense?
Yeah, I mean, he's excited about the defense. He's high on the South Carolina transfer. They got Shamik Blackshear, defensive end. I mean, that's, to me, the biggest questions. You know, it's obvious, but replacing Vanagoo and Collier, and they really like O'Shawn Mathis. They really like this Shamik Blackshear. And the other thing, too, and you know, I'm going to write about it more kind of as the season gets closer, but they got Ross Blacklock healthy and Corey Bethley kind of emerged really last year. They're going to be able to get more inside disruption and pressure probably than they had last year. So that should kind of take some weight off the edge rushers who have to replace two NFL talents. So I do think the D-line is going to be a bear for a lot of teams to handle.
How about the linebackers? Did I read that he's going to go to the 3-4 defense?
No, we're not moving to the 3-4.
Okay.
No.
I just want to read a comment. Or maybe I misread it. Not an uncommon thing for me, but I thought he said moving from the 3 to the 3-4 gives us more mobile defense. But I probably misread it. I'm just wondering if we did that, who would our 4 linebackers be?
Well, if you remember last year, we had a bit of a hybrid system. And I think that was mainly just because of personnel. But it worked out. Yeah. I mean, it seemed to work out. But we had you know, guys like Wallow that were able to kind of come out of that and really kind of help out when guys like Summers weren't able to get in there. And I think that and now that we've got – what was it? The defensive backfield is what the average height is, what,
6'2"? Yeah, that's exciting.
For all those TCU fans who remember that most of our defensive backs were like 5'10", 5'11", if you were lucky – 5'11 and a half. And now to have guys who are 6'2 and can run and jump, I mean, that's fantastic.
He's been looking for taller cornerbacks for a long time. Yes. And you got to have them because the receivers are getting bigger. You got to have people to bear up against those guys.
And, hey, Drew, who do you think? I mean, we know Iowa State is no slouch. I mean, obviously, they're ranked number 3 right now in these preseason Big 12 rankings. Who do you predict will kind of be a jaw dropper this year? Anybody like surprise, come out and surprise everyone?
I mean, I hate to say it, but I think Baylor's kind of a dangerous team. I mean, Matt Rhule, I think, is a good coach. Their schedule's not overly demanding. And I think they've got, you know, Mims is a good outside receiver and Charlie Brewer's got some experience. I think they're a team that, in another, I think Texas Tech, if Bowman's healthy, I think they could kind of surprise people. But TCU's, I think, you know, a team that, like I said, I mean, they've got so much talent on each side of the ball. I think they got 7-8 guys who should, you know, if the season goes as expected, be right in the mix for NFL combine invites. And, you know, I think if Alex Delton, Max Duggan, Justin Rogers, whoever wins the quarterback job kind of comes on. I mean, I think they're going to be they'll be a scary team. I don't think OU, I don't think Texas will be looking forward to facing them.
Excellent. I was hoping to say that.
So that's a good segue. Let's kind of wrap this up because I know we're getting a little long, but let's talk about season predictions. And, you know, Wes – What are the top – who do you think the top two teams at the end of the season are going to be looking and facing each other off at AT&T Stadium for the conference championship?
Well
– and you could go purple glasses on this. That's perfectly fine. I'm just saying, you know, who do you think it is and why do you think that's going to be?
Well, I think the Frogs are due for a really good year. So I see them coming in. I think we got, as Drew said, we got all the weapons on in place to make something like happen. You can't rule out OU. And so I predict that the TCU-OU showdown at Jerry World for the conference championship. So don't ask me for a score.
Yeah, I know. Not going there. Ryan, what about you? What do you think? Who do the teams are going to rise to the top this season?
I agree with Wes. I think, you know, if TCU can stay healthy, and that's the big what if, I think it's going to be us, and I think OU will be there. There's no reason for OU not to be there, right? I mean, they just reload every season, even when they get hurt, you know.
Well, if we're lucky, maybe we pass the injury bug to them.
Maybe. I want to beat a really good OU, though. You know, like I want everybody to be healthy.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely.
I think Gary said we have more depth this year. You know, that's something that we have struggled with in the past, just our team. But as we mature through the years, you know, we're getting a little bit more depth. So hopefully that is true. If not, you know, I Iowa State. Oh man, you know, they were almost there last year, and you kind of root for them in a way, because we've been there, right? We love their coach.
Campbell's a great coach.
Yeah, I think they might be, and nobody expects, especially from we do. I think in the Big 12, because we've seen glimpses of them.
No, nobody expects the Spanish Inquisition.
But nationally, they're not even ranked, you know, like nationally, they're not even on the radar. And I think that's going to be a big surprise for people nationally, not necessarily in the Big 12. So that's my take.
Good one.
Drew, how about you?
Well, I think it's hard not to pick Oklahoma, and especially they got the new defensive coordinator.
Who is the coordinator, Drew?
Yeah, so I think OU will be there. And just so Frog fans can yell at me on Twitter at the end of the season, tell me what an idiot I am. I will say this. I think, you know, I kind of got Texas, Iowa State, TCU kind of right, kind of bunched together. I just think TCU at Iowa State is a tough game. Iowa State's got Brock Purdy. I just have a feeling that game, whoever wins that game will probably decide it. And I'll go with Iowa State, just so, like I said, all the fans can tell me what an idiot I am at the end of the year. But, no, I do think Iowa State, like I said, with Purdy and Matt Campbell, and, you know, having that game there, I really do think, you know, a lot of home field type stuff's going to come into play, because I think this is a very even field, so to speak, when you really look at it.
I'd agree with that. Now, who is OU's new defensive coordinator?
It is Alex Grinch from he was at Washington State with Mike Leach. I think he was somewhere else last year. I'm going blank, but yeah, I think he should, you know, it's hard to be worse than OU was last year. So I think he should help him get a little bit.
Well,
back
I think firing Mike Stoops and getting him out of there, probably the smartest move they've made in a long time. That guy, yes. I would never. The defensive coordinator.
Yeah.
But I remember going up there. He's just a wild man in the press box on the field. And I've told this story a couple of times. So Scott and I are up there sitting in the press box in one game. We played him a couple of times.
No, it was
ago.
Me and you. It was you and I.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Remember he kept hearing this loud foot stomp.
Yep.
And it resonated down from the upper tier of the press box to down to where we're sitting. Somebody said, that's Mike Stoops. Okay, so you could kind of hear some muffled yells. And then at one point in the third quarter, out of the corner of my eye, I see this object flying out of the coach's box. And Stoops picked up a stapler and just thrown it out the window. You know, and I thought, God, that guy is crazy. You know, it didn't hit anybody. There was a kind of a covering coming down from that our level of the press box covering some seats, but he could have easily hit somebody.
At least it wasn't a chair.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Sean and I were safe, but, you know. But,
that was a fun game. That was I believe that was the game where Bram Kohlhausen came in, and I think we ended up for two and missed the 2-point conversion. Everybody was like, "Oh, why'd you do that, Gary? You could have tied it." I thought it was the right call to make in that game, but Stoops, Gary had Stoops in a corner, and it was with our third string or fourth string quarterback at that point. So, yeah, it wasn't the only thing he threw out that window that night. But we'll that was a lot of fun. But yeah, I'm going to kind of go with Drew on this. I kind of agree that game. This is one of those, you know, when we went into the league, of course, we took over the schedule that we did, and this odd year schedule where we have to go to Oklahoma, we have to go to both Oklahomas in the same year, and you have to go up to Iowa State. This is that type of season that seems to have been, since we've gotten into the Big 12, the one that we can't quite seem to kind of put things together in, and things seem to happen. Yeah. But that trip up to Ames is the one. I agree with you, Drew. I think that's the one game. And I mentioned to you, Ryan, today, this Iowa State team is going to shock a lot of people. I think they've got a lot of the pieces put together. It is a very mature team. And I think that if we can get past that team on the road, that will be a game that will define exactly how this season is going to go for the Frogs. But, yeah, I think it can either be your TCU or Iowa State against Oklahoma sitting there in Jerry's World.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Well, if it's not us, I hope it's Iowa State. Because I like that coach. I think he's a good coach and a good guy. And I like little Abby
Faber
up there, too.
Yeah.
But if college football, early October game could mean you're in the conference championship or not. I mean, not many sports can say, you know, hey, an early season contest is really going to, you know, factor in so much late in the year.
And thank goodness it's early and not late, because last time we were up there, it was freezing. So – maybe won't be as cold.
Yeah. And we all know how well Frogs do in the cold.
They don't
weather.
Do well in the cold, no. It's true.
Even back in 2014 at Kansas, right? That was a close game. That was in the freezing cold weather. But, yeah, it's going to be an interesting season. Obviously, there's been a lot of changes, not only to the game from officiating standpoint, but also the coaches across the league. I think we all kind of got a real good fix on who these coaches are. I don't think there was a single new coach that we came across that we didn't like. And I know that kind of, for some Frog fans, it's kind of hard to say something nice about the head coach at Texas Tech. But
and Baylor. And Baylor.
And I think, out of these 10 coaches, 9 of them come across as very likable, very good guys who have their program pointed in the right direction. We'll leave the audience to guess who the odd man out is there. But overall, I think that this is going to be a really good season. And I think moving forward, this is going to be one of the toughest conferences to play football in. Drew, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree with you, Sean. And I kind of look at the Big 12 football kind of like basketball. I mean, there's 10 good coaches, 10 good programs on football, and someone's going to have to lose. It'll be kind of, that makes it interesting. And Oklahoma, can they win 5 straight? I'm one that, doesn't think dynasties are that bad. I think they kind of, if UConn women's basketball, it's kind of, that's what you know about it, right? And so I think, I agree. I think it's a great conference this year. I think all the coaches are likable. For the most part, but it should be an entertaining year. And hey, there's playmakers all across the board. Obviously TCU's got one in Rager, and then you look at Tylan Wallace at Oklahoma State. So there's, guys every game. There's a guy you're going to want to watch and tune in for.
Do you think we're finally the Big 12 is finally past being crapped on by the media? By ESPN.
As a media member.
ESPN.
Well, I will say this. I mean, Oklahoma got in over Ohio State last year to the college football playoffs. I do think the Big 12s get more respect. I don't know if they get enough, because I don't think, playing the round robin in football, no other conference does that. So the path the Big 12 had, you know, back in the day when Nebraska was here, you know, they just had to beat Texas or Oklahoma once, and then boom, they're right there. But, you know, of course, K-State occasionally had a good team, or Missouri. But, you know, this conference, I mean, it really is tough. And I think Oklahoma's gotten the benefit of the doubt. Obviously, TCU, Baylor did not in 2014.
I was going to say, when TCU gets in over Ohio State, then maybe we can say we're over the hump, right?
Right.
We would have won the national championship that year, by the way.
Yeah, well, hey, if it's TCU, Indiana, you know, I think TCU probably gets the nod. It's just how it goes.
Indiana.
It has to be Indiana. Is that it? Gosh. TCU, Grambling State, you know, maybe at that point in time.
I'm sorry. I was thinking about it. I was just thinking about it.
That'll get you in trouble. I really do, and they really harp on that during the media days, is, you know, it's one true champion. We do, I mean, the Big 12 has to play, every single team every year. It's not playing OU every other year, like, you know, like Alabama and who else is good in the SEC? Alabama and
Georgia.
Georgia, LSU sometimes. Yeah. They don't play Florida every year. And so
Vanderbilt.
That's a big difference, because the players filter in and filter out. It's different. And when you play the same team every year, it's the same plays every year. And so it is tougher.
Patterson mentioned that when he was talking about it. He's like, look, you can't, because of course, and Drew, I asked you this pregame. I mean, like, we kept getting the same question every single time. Every single time a coach got up, coach, got four new coaches in the league. What do you think of these new coaches? Well, Drew, as a member of the media, what are you guys expecting? You expected the coach to go, well, the guy's a rat bastard. I'm telling you, I hate him.
Yeah. Well, for the record, I'm not claiming to ask the best questions, but I did not ask that one. But no.
Right, yeah.
I mean, yeah, everyone. That's just an easy storyline, and you know, maybe a coach will say something interesting or whatnot. But yeah, I mean, do you have to ask all 10 coaches? Probably not. But you know, that's there are kind of just the standard, you know, questions guys ask. And,
like realignment.
Thank you to our friends at Frogs of War for making that. What was it that Bowlesby said? 5 straight years in a row for that.
Seven,
being the first question.
Seven straight years
to making that the first question. Listen,
mullet. What are you gonna do? At least the guy prefaced his question with, "I know you can't get through a conference."
didn't I tell you? I told you there was gonna be a question about hair.
Yeah,
and it was the last question of the day
question.
To Gundy. Oh my gosh,
yeah. Gundy loves it.
That guy loves it.
The sad thing is the mullets are coming back, which is crazy.
Right, it is.
Now he's gonna be cool.
Well, but more getting back to what Ryan was saying, you know, Patterson was talking about, you know, when it came his turn to be asked about all the new coaches and how, you know, how he felt. He got in and he was talking about, you know, look, when you play these guys as many times as you do, there's nothing new. You know, nothing new is coming out. I mean, sure, everybody has tape on everybody. So, I mean, but he said the only nice thing about having new coaches in the league is that you don't feel like you need to prepare something different. You can kind of be who you are because they haven't really prepared for you yet. That's the only advantage of having new coaches in the league.
Good point.
Yeah. But outside of that, though, I think these guys, especially if Les Miles can work his magic in Kansas and bring the level of competition at Kansas up, this team from top, this whole league from top to bottom in the next couple of years is going to be an absolute beast.
Mm-hmm. So. Well, let's wrap up. I sure do appreciate Drew coming and joining us this
Thank
evening.
You, Drew.
Nice. Yeah, just to have
you on.
Hopefully,
yeah.
I was okay.
No, you're great. I mean, like, I
much high profile guests compared to me, but
no, not at all. It's
wait,
nice.
Wait, have you ever seen this podcast?
No, you're welcome back anytime, and anything we can do to help you, we're here to do that. And we're really very blessed to have Wes on this podcast with us. It's been a few months since we've done a podcast because baseball team didn't go very far in the playoffs. But anyway, we'll change that next year. But
it can happen.
So it's been kind of a boring summer for us, but we're just so thankful that Wes was able to join us this evening. And Wes, it's good to hear your voice.
It's hadn't been fun, like I said, but I'm still here. And the thing I feel good about, a small W in the win column for me, is that the average life expectancy after diagnosis for this cancer is 15.6 months. I'm already in month 17, so looking forward to month 18. So let's keep moving forward.
Absolutely. And we expect to see you at the State of the Frogdom August 30th.
I will be here.
We will, yes, we will do whatever we can to make sure you are there. We're looking forward to it.
I've got a ride there.
Fantastic. Oh, yeah. Get you there for opening day, too. So.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Kick the season off right.
We'll get there.
All right.
Well, Wes,
we love
thank
you, Wes.
You for
you hang in there.
Thanks for staying up past your bedtime tonight.
Okay. Thanks, everybody.
I appreciate it. Well, with that, I think we've come to the end of the podcast. Let me see if I remember how this outro goes, shall I? Mm-hmm. You can go ahead and go on to killerfrogs.com and sign up for a free account and discuss TCU Athletics with the rest of us. Of course, you can find all of your news at frogswire.com and find Killer Frogs on all your major social media platforms. We're on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube. By the way, if you are on Instagram, go to killer_frogs. You can see the new helmet. Has this really nice little purple stripe right down the face mask.
That should be in red, but...
Well, yeah. Well, Ryan and I were debating whether or not that stripe down the helmet should be red or not. But go check it out yourself. It looks nice. It's a nice little detail. Nike does some things right every so often, and this was one thing I think everyone agrees is, okay, maybe Ryan doesn't think Nike does things right every once in a while, but in this particular case, pertaining to helmets, I think it looks fine. But anyway...
We could have Russell as our athletic suppliers.
Yeah, well,
that's true.
Yeah.
Good point.
Or Under Armour.
We'll save this for the uniform podcast that'll come up sometime
in the
near future. Yeah. Maybe. Yeah. We'll see how it goes. But no, thanks everyone for out there listening to us. We're available on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, pretty much everywhere major podcasts are found. And with that, we have come to the end of the podcast, but the start of a new football season. So it's time to get the horns up. And Drew, you can join us or not. I know you want to be a neutral part of the media. But there you go. He got it. He got it. Another one. I saw it. It's on video. And with that, we come to the end of the podcast. We get the horns up and we get to say,
Go Frogs.
Drew, thanks for being a good sport, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah,
thanks, Drew. Yeah. Good night, Wes.
Good night.